Well, fourth and lastly, the offering of the mandala. The mandala is not the same here as the circle of symbolic forms. Here, a mandala means a symbolical representation of the entire universe according to ancient Indian cosmological traditions. The ancient Indians had their own views about the nature, the constitution of the physical universe. So the mandala is a symbolical representation of the universe according to these ancient Indian traditions. And the practice consists in offering this mandala, offering this symbolical representation of the whole physical cosmos, as it were, to the three jewels, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha, in their exoteric as well as in their esoteric aspects. And these three, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, in these two aspects, exoteric and esoteric, are to be visualized more or less as in the going for refuge and prostration practice, except that here there is no tree. So how does one do this? First of all, one performs the sevenfold puja. You're all familiar with the sevenfold puja, which we celebrate after the lecture every evening here and on other occasions. But in this context, it's not the ordinary Mahayana sevenfold puja, but it's a special esoteric tantric version of that sevenfold puja. There's no time to explain all these things at the moment. And having performed that tantric version of the sevenfold puja, one builds up and one offers the mandala. The mandala, the symbolical representation of the universe, is made up of 37 parts, and one constructs it on a circular copper base by heaping rice and then putting rings around, rings of copper or silver and so on, until one has built up a sort of conical or a sort of pyramid-like structure with different tiers and different heaps of rice, which one places at intervals all around the foundation and also at higher levels, represent different elements in the physical universe. And one has to bear these in mind and repeat their names when one is building up this particular model, as it were. It's all too complicated to describe in detail. But there are several ways of offering. The usual way is that when one has built up the mandala using the copper or silver base and heaping with rice and then adding more tiers and heaping them with rice and putting something symbolical on the top, the usual method is that one lifts it up in one's hands and recites various mantras and various verses expressive of one's offering up of the entire universe to the Buddha, the Dharma and the Sangha. And the whole thing, of course, has to be done 100,000 times. Incidentally, I must interpose here just a little comment that amongst the slides, which I hope we shall be showing at the end of the, or after the last lecture in the series, there will be one slide showing a simple form, a simple version of this mandala model, complete with rice and so on. So you'll know exactly what it looks like. Now, the meaning of the practice. The one who is practicing, the one who is doing the four Mula Yogas, wishes to gain enlightenment, Buddhahood, for the sake of all living beings. In other words, he wishes or she wishes to become a Buddha. But for this purpose, an enormous accumulation of what is technically called merit or punya is necessary. And it's axiomatic for Buddhism in all its forms that merit or punya is gained by dana, by giving, by generosity. This is in a way the basic, the cardinal Buddhist virtue to give. And this is one of the most wonderful features of life in Buddhist countries, that everybody is so generous. They so readily share with you whatever they've got. If you visit someone, if you go to their home, at once you must be offered at least tea, if possible a whole meal, or some little gift. And if you go to see someone, you must take something along with you, not go empty-handed. So this is a great characteristic of Buddhism everywhere, dana, because it's a means to punya, spiritual merits, and so on. Now, if it's meritorious just to offer a cup of tea or a little money, or if it's meritorious to give one's time or one's energy, or if it's meritorious, say, to offer a monastery or a temple, how much more meritorious it would be to offer the whole universe, to offer absolutely everything. Well, how much merit you'd gain from that. And of course, Buddhism teaches, especially in the Mahayana form, that it's the intention that counts. The sincere mental offering is the real offering. In all the religions of the world, there are versions of the story of the widow's mite. It's not what you give, it's the will to give that counts. So this is the way in which merit is accumulated. You mentally, with sincerity, with devotion, you offer up the whole universe, a symbolical representation of the whole material world, in all its levels, all its layers, all its aspects, all its features, with all its treasures. And you try to develop the genuine spiritual feeling that if everything was yours, you'd offer it all to the Buddha, you'd offer it all to the Dharma, you'd offer it all to the Sangha. And in this way, you accumulate spiritual merits. Of course, it is very important that this shouldn't become a formula or a formality. One must genuinely feel at the time of offering the mandala that you are offering up absolutely everything. That even if you became the richest man in the world, no need to mention names, but even if you became the richest man in the world, you devoted all to Buddhism, all to the Buddha, all to the Dharma, all to the Sangha. Or even if you became master of the whole universe, well, you would be able to think of nothing better to do with it than offering it to the Buddha. Some Buddhist kings in the past, in a very grandiose way, actually offered their whole kingdom to the Buddha. Sometimes they're taking it back the next day, but that's neither here nor there. But you get the feeling, you get the idea, this will to give, this will to surrender, the will to offer up. This is what the offering of the mandala really signifies or really symbolizes. So these are the four foundation yogas. And as I said at the beginning, they're the basis of Tibetan spiritual practice. And unless we know them, we really understand nothing, or very, very little at best, of Tibetan spiritual life. As I've said, they're usually regarded as preparatory to the practice of the Vajrayana as a whole, the practice of Tantric Buddhism. But it is also said that any one of them, whether the going for refuge and prostration, or the development of the bodhicitta, or the practice of the Vajrasattva visualization and mantra recitation, or the offering of the mandala, any one of them, if thoroughly practiced, deeply and sincerely and continuously practiced, will bring one very, very near to enlightenment. Especially, it is said, the third mula yoga, the meditation and mantra recitation of Vajrasattva. Perhaps it isn't necessary for me to say anything more in this connection. Perhaps all that remains is for us to practice. And even if we confine ourselves to the content of this lecture, we'll probably have enough to keep us busy for quite a long time to come.